Hey, Zero Block 30 listeners, you can find us every Tuesday and Friday on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and YouTube. Prime members can also listen ad-free on Amazon Music.
Summer is all about the freedom to have fun. Forget a vacation and take a tequila-cation with new Truly Tequila Soda. This refreshing blend of real fruit juice from concentrate, sparkling water, and premium tequila blanco is the drink of the summer. Try all four refreshing flavors, all with 5% ABV and just 100 calories. Truly Tequila Soda. Keep it light. Hard Seltzer Beverage Company, Boston, Massachusetts. Please drink responsibly.
How are you doing, Cons?
I'm doing well. This
you
is
French
sort
fuck.
Of like, what's that?
You French fuck.
Oh, chaps, it's not my fault that I can speak multiple languages and you have trouble with the English language. That's not on me,
I'm
buddy.
Good at the English language, pal. I'm a wordsmith. I'm good at it. Now,
yeah,
reading it is different.
Yeah, exactly. But no, I'm good. This is kind of like our version of a deployment now, me being out of the studio. Except there's nobody trying to mortar me, and it's not 140 degrees outside, and I don't wear the same clothes every day. But other than that, this is just like a deployment.
So it's like an Air Force deployment. Boom roasted!
Yeah, exactly!
Boom roasted! I'm just kidding. I just read a pretty badass story about an Air Force guy who is the unofficial badass of the week. Dude, like, fought back. He was out in the middle of Afghanistan by himself. I'm doing some forward observer shit and was calling in close air support and was danger close. So we shit on the Air Force all the time, but we love you fucks too, you motherfuckers.
Yeah, you fly boys. You fly boys. You, and you guys did that really cool 69 nice formation this week that we saw on Twitter. Yeah. We'll tweet that picture out, include that in the blog.
70 years old too. Finally getting some tradition in your branch. That's dope.
Yeah. So you guys aren't that bad, but for real, JTACs, they're the real deal because they got to be able to coordinate across multiple branches, multiple types of aircraft, and what they're capable of is actually very impressive. So shout out to them.
Being a dog handler guy at the school, I used to teach everybody in it. The requirements were the same once you're a dog handler. So like you could go. I had several dog handlers with me that worked for me when I was in Fallujah, like that were Air Force guys or Navy guys, Army guys, whoever, didn't matter. They bucked up and did the job. Guys, girls, they bucked up and did the job just like anybody else. It takes some fucking stones to be an Air Force E-4, E-5 and roll up into a Marine infantry unit and say, you guys are following me today. That takes some stones.
Yeah, absolutely, because number one, you're the new kid in school, but also two, just the way we kind of bust the Air Force's chops, that is a common theme among all the branches, that they're kind of seen as like the cushy guys that don't really work that hard, so you got to fight against that stereotype.
That's how I felt when I would go to school, like the instructor school down here, whenever it was like a academic setting, and I was with the other branches of the service. I'm like, if I fail, they're going to just assume that all Marines are stupid, man. It's just going to continue that stereotype. But you're in Boston. I don't know about you, but now that I'm in my like mid-30s, I'm actually, because my birthday is gone from 35, I would say that I'm like kind of late 30s because I'm on the back half of my 30s now.
Yeah,
I'm
you
in the
are.
Back nine of my 30s. I am so damn tired when I come back from trips. This week I'm just like exhausted, and I was gone for like 4 days. Do you feel that way?
It depends on the trip. You know, if it's maybe a bachelor party, yeah, I could feel some fatigue. But, you know, I'm up here kind of just going through my normal work day, just going through the motions up here, just a different spot. The only thing is I don't have the comforts of home, but living in a hotel for a few days doesn't stink. But I get what you're saying. But also, too, I think just like I said, I might be fatigued from something like a bachelor party. It seems like anytime you go away now, it's a quasi-bachelor party because it's typically not with your daughters and your wife around. Mm-hmm. You're hanging out with the boys, and you're getting after it a little bit. And I'd imagine that's what your trip to Jacksonville was like.
Yeah, it was. But when I came back, I was still a little bit tired. But luckily for me, I have a Dunkin' Donuts right by my house. So I can go hit up their new cold brew coffee that is carefully steeped in cold water for maximum fucking flavor, my friends. It has a rich and smooth, full-bodied taste. You know I love anything that's full-body, coffee included, coffee, red wine, whatever. Just give me the full-body flavor. It's specifically crafted in small batches, not some huge fucking bat, not some gross-ass coffee from one of these other chains. your coffee, your Dunkin', Viva La Dunkin', Viva La Stool, get you some cold brew coffee. This week, we have big week this week because we've been trying to get Sean Doolittle on the show for a while. There's a lot of vets, not veterans, there's a lot of athletes, celebrities who really get into helping out veteran causes.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of these causes are sexy. It's really sexy to help out wounded warriors. It's really sexy to help out people with PTSD. It's really sexy to build homes and do these things that are tangible that you can see. Not so sexy to help people who are struggling because they got bad conduct or bad paperwork, discharges from the military, and have their VA stripped, because some of those stories aren't pretty. They're oftentimes very, very ugly stories of the aftermath, what PTSD actually looks like and how it can affect your life. So having Sean on later in the show to talk about that is going to be great. You're going to love that interview. We're also bringing on Young Clem and him from my other podcast, Podfathers, and from Konza, their podcast, the Challenge, for MTV The Challenge, No Quitters Pod. So he's going to be on there later. But I wanted to talk a little bit about my trip to Jacksonville because mm-hmm. it was dope, man. Like, I consider myself a dog expert. Like, I know a lot about dogs. But
right.
some of these things, when we actually went to Canines for Warriors, some of these things that I was seeing, I was like, whoa, man, that's pretty damn intense. Because I taught canines how to find bombs, how to find drugs, and I don't know if I've ever explained kind of how that process works. Have I?
A little bit. We've talked, because I can recall asking questions on the different processes by which you identify a bomb versus narcotics, and it's fascinating the steps that you have to go through with the dogs, and geez, just how smart they are and how much they can learn. If you would like to touch on that again to bring new listeners up to speed, I'm always fascinated by it, so have at it.
All right, so there's a couple things that we look at when we're talking about introducing a task to a dog. One of the ways that you do it is called successive approximation. In successive approximation, you teach basically baby steps, where the process of learning how to bite and somebody take somebody down starts at the dog being interested in what you want them to bite. So if you want them to bite the arm, like waving the arm in their face and getting them to look at it, that's step one. Then getting them to actually engage with the arm would be step two. When we're talking about explosives in the military, there's really 9 different types of explosives in the world. Now, there's many more actual variances of those types of explosives, but we only teach 9 different ways. 9 different types of odors for the dog to be able to find in order to find bombs. And the reason why that is because it's kind of like teaching you to find different colors. If I teach you how to find red and I teach you how to find yellow, then you can find orange. If I mm-hmm. teach you how to find blue and yellow, you can find green and every shade in between. So whenever we're teaching dogs, we teach them the primary colors of odors like C4, ammonium nitrate, time fuse, deck cord. Those are the primary colors for any type of explosive in the entire world. Same thing with narcotics. If we teach them to find weed and meth and MDMA, then we can teach them to find damn near any drug on the market. There's more drugs and more bombs than those, but I'm not going to get into all of those. Now, whenever you're talking about a service dog like we had at Canines for Warriors, it was very, very different because you're not teaching them anything tangible like that. Deck cord and time fuse are specific things that you teach them to find that odor.
Yeah, emotions are not tangible.
Right, and every single person's emotions is going to be different. They told me that they take these dogs over the period of months to bring them up to speed on how to identify some of these triggers that somebody with PTSD or traumatic brain injury would be going through, like fidgeting with their hands, or they call it self-grooming. Any type of self-grooming that the dog sees, the dog knows that the handler is feeling kind of nervous, so the dog will position its body. And teaching the dog how to be that observant, and these dogs are shelter dogs. They're not fucking dogs that were bred for $10,000
right.
like some of the dogs that we had. These are dogs that are picked up at the fucking Humane Society because the handlers who train them know what they're looking for. So they're just picking up any old dog off the street, fucking Joey Mutt from up the road, to do this.
And who knows what Joey Mutt's background was. He might have came from an abusive household, so you got to probably fight through all those bad emotions that that dog is dealing with and wipe the slate clean before you can even teach him all these new tricks that he needs to deal with his new owner.
Yeah, because, I mean, a lot of times, especially with a group like Canines for Warriors, they are saving the dog just as much as they're saving the human, because the dog is just sitting in a shelter looking absolutely miserable. You have these guys come and throw him into a bus, and they go down to Ponte Vedra Beach, Florida, which is beautiful, beautiful Ponte Vedra Beach, and they're training. What they do with the handler before their actual patient or the military member who's struggling with PTSD goes through. It's incredible, man. And they talked about this process, and you're going to see more. I can't wait to release the video on Barstool, but we're really taking our time to develop this so it comes out just the way we want it to. But they take these dogs and the handlers. Well, they take the handlers when they first get there and ask them questions that look like fucking eHarmony list of what do you like to do in your free time? Where do you live? What's your favorite type of food? If you had a perfect vacation, what would it be? Do you want to go to school? They have all these questions, and the handlers who have been training the dogs for weeks or months are listening to this, and while this is going on, they're like going through the stats in their head of this is the dog that's going to work for them. So they identify the dog for the handler. It's not just like you walk up like at SIF gear for supply in the military and they hand you a fucking Alice pack. They make this eHarmony match for the dog and the handler. It's a beautiful thing, man. Like, and they're doing such good things, and I'm so happy for everybody to get the chance to see it.
Yeah, that's fascinating to think about. You're matching personalities, really. A dog's personality, because every person has a personality, you know, but sometimes I think people forget that animals have personalities too. So the fact that they have that ability to, one, figure out the dog's personality and then match them is truly remarkable. So I think that's great. And the other reason I think that it's great and that I'm so proud that we've partnered with K9 for Warriors, not just in this one-time effort to get these service dogs, but in addition, we sell our ZBT t-shirts and 50% of those profits always go to K9 for Warriors, which is awesome because, as Chaps and I have mentioned in the past, and Chaps mentioned it earlier just now, you know, there are the bigger organizations that get all the attention, and I'm proud that we have partnered with and we support one of the organizations that probably doesn't get the same kind of shine that everybody actually – I know it doesn't get the same kind of shine that some of these bigger organizations do, but has such a profound impact on veterans. So I think it's a really great thing. And, again, I want to thank our listeners for raising all that money that we were able to get these two dogs. And what were their names again? If you could remind everyone, please.
Little ZB. ZB's coming soon. We're at, like, number 30 on the wait list for the dogs. So we got ZB coming and Venmo coming. And you could see the matching of the personalities blatantly, because a lot of the trainers who work there are graduates of the program. So it's not like they went out and paid high dollar amounts for these really experienced canine trainers, which can be very, very expensive for organizations to do. They have people who actually realize what these dogs are useful for. There's one gentleman that we met and we interviewed. There's actually two. Both of them are graduates from the program. One dude was the calmest dude ever. Just like, you could see that he just wanted to like lay down and take a nap the entire time that he was talking to us. He was like leaning up against the objects. His dog, Utah, was the laziest fucking dog I've ever seen. So it was like they were the same person. It was like if you sliced off his hand and made that hand like you were God in the Old Testament and formed it into a little dog for him, like his little Eve version of dog, it would be this dog. The other dude that we met, Andrew, he was a lot more lively. Like, he spoke with his hands a lot. He had this little husky German Shepherd mix that was bouncing all over the place because he was clearly like a more hyper guy, so we needed a more hyper dog. Because the guy who handled Utah, the lazy fucking dog, was like, if I wanted to go fishing, this is exactly what Utah would do. He would lay there because that's who he is. If I wanted to go hunting and was just sitting in the deer stand for hours, that's exactly what Utah would do. I look at Utah, I was like, do you want to go for a walk? And Utah just looks at me and like kind of grunts. He's like, of course not, motherfucker. I want to stay here. I'm all tile and air conditioning. Why would I want to go outside?
No, that's fascinating to me. Because, I mean, it's people joke that you sometimes dogs and their owners somewhat take on the appearance of one another and their personality. And it's just funny to me how that happens. And it's really just a natural process. So it's great that they're able to really kind of aid that process to find the right dogs for them. It's super cool. It really is. I'm excited myself to see this video.
Yeah, because, I mean, whenever you're having those stakes, you're really betting on the dog to save somebody's life, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You really are. Where you're not going to bet on your life, but you can bet a little bit of money, is going to be on DraftKings this year. DraftKings is the fantasy football has officially begun. We're in week 3. My Jags are 1-1. Connor, your boys at West Point are 2-0, right?
2-1.
Two and one.
I just returned from my trip.
Ohio State.
Mm. Yeah, and I would like to just really, I thank all the folks out there at Ohio State. Chaps, we got a lot of Zero Black 30 listeners who are in Columbus, Ohio, and they were extremely generous, both with just coming up to me and introducing themselves, and more so at the bar, buying me and my buddies a lot of drinks.
Well, hopefully they can do that with $100,000 in their pockets this week with the Pick'em. That's the best way to find it. You could do it faster than ever. It's been organized into 8 tiers. All you have to do is select one player from each tier, choose between public contests with big prizes or private contests. DraftKings has beginner and casual contests where if you're a great fantasy football player, if you're not, go to DraftKings.com. Use the promo code CHAPS to play DraftKings for free with $100,000 in prizes this Sunday. That's promo code CHAPS to get your share of $100,000. The contest is totally free. Why wouldn't you try? DraftKings.com, promo code CHAPS. But before we get to the clip with me, Clem, and Connor, I'm proud to have Sean Doolittle from the Washington Nationals on. Sean was a good enough dude to come on, even though I fucked up his interview last time. We had a great interview where we called each other handsome for like 20 minutes, so just imagine that before you hear this clip coming up from Sean Doolittle of the Washington Nationals. We have a guy who's kind enough to come on. Like, there's a few weeks ago, he was still pitching for the A's. I was just getting started on learning how to actually record the podcast at home, and I fucked everything up. I didn't actually hit record, or it didn't record. Something crazy went on, but Sean Doolittle was nice enough to come back on the show to talk about an issue that's very near to him. Sean, welcome back, man.
Thanks, man. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, so the last time we talked, you were still pitching for the A's. Now you are in Washington, which is pretty close to your alma mater, the University of Virginia. How does it feel back to be back on the East Coast?
It's great, man. Yeah, you mentioned being close to where I went to school. It's also close to where I grew up. I'm originally from South Jersey. So after being on the West Coast I was with the A's organization for 10 years. To be back on the East Coast, near friends and family, it's been fun so far.
And you are killing it. I mean, you got traded late summer. You already have 19 saves. You're the bona fide closer in Washington. Playoff runs coming up. You excited?
Yeah, man, I can't wait. We were fortunate enough to clinch the division, I guess like a week ago, and man, we are ready for playoffs right now. We're coming down the home stretch right now. We still have a couple guys we need to get healthy and stuff, but man, we're really looking forward to the playoffs.
You have your arms all ready to go. You can have your rotation set exactly the way you want to instead of having to play like one of the play-in games. You guys really are sitting pretty. Bryce is back hitting bombs. I heard he was hitting like 460 bombs in batting practice already.
Putting on a show. Yeah, he was putting on a show, man. He looks like he's really close to being back. And, you know, like you said, we'll be able to have the rotation set up the way that we want. This is what we played all year for, man. We're looking forward to it.
Yeah, I can't wait to. I mean, because the Astros jumped out to such a big lead, I mean, they were up like 15 games in May, and they really just kind of had to hit cruise control to win the division. So I'm excited for some meaningful games because they just clinched this week too. But we didn't bring you on to talk about baseball. If you want more baseball talk, you can go to section or to starting nine. They're doing a great job with baseball talk over there too. But we wanted to bring you on because you're doing a lot of stuff with veterans. And one of the causes, you get constant causes that celebrities and athletes kind of attach themselves to. One is Wounded Warriors. I mean, I think everybody really cares about the wounded veterans a lot. And not saying that's a bad thing. That's obviously a great thing. But some kind of get left almost in the dust. And some of those guys that get left in the dust are the people who come back with things like PTSD or traumatic brain injury, and they end up getting a little bit in trouble while they're on active duty. And those people get what's called bad conduct discharges or bad paperwork discharges in general. Can you kind of tell us why you attached yourself to that cause?
Military causes, veterans issues are something that I've always been very passionate about. My fiance and I both come from military families, and so it's something that is close to us that we pay a lot of attention to and spend a lot of time working on. And so early last year, we've been involved with a number of military charities, but we wanted to do something maybe a little bit different or shine a light on something that maybe hasn't gotten a lot of publicity. And that's when we were doing some research, one of the things that kept coming up was some of these suicide statistics among veterans. And so we started kind of diving into ways that we could maybe figure out a way to stop or end the suicide epidemic. And one of the things that kept coming up was the issue of bad paper and these veterans who have become ostracized and marginalized and have lost their veteran status, making them ineligible for VA care, leaving them really susceptible to issues like homelessness and unemployment and suicide. So we wrote an op-ed earlier in Sports Illustrated earlier this year about bad paper. But the stuff that we learned, we did research for months and talked to a number of different people at a number of different places in and around Washington. So we found some really, really interesting stuff, some really a lot of things that I think a lot of people don't realize, even that I didn't realize being a military brat myself.
Oh, definitely. There are things from that article that I learned. I mean, I knew for a while that there was a lot of people getting kicked out with PTSD or with traumatic brain injury. They were having bad conduct discharges. I knew that they went to the VA, but I had no idea the staggering numbers. One of the numbers that you pointed out in the article was that between 2009 and 2014 alone, in just the Army, 22,000 soldiers were dismissed, even though they had already been diagnosed with mental health disorders, and those people don't have access to VA care or mental health or anything like that. It's unbelievable.
So one of the things that I think the general public or the, maybe the common misconception is that when someone serves in the military and they leave the military, they are eligible for full benefits. And what we're finding out is that's not always the case. Whether maybe they didn't serve the entire time that they signed up to serve for, or maybe there was some misconduct involved where they were discharged prior to that service term coming to an end. What bad paper deals with specifically is these people that fall into this gray area between an honorable discharge and a dishonorable discharge. Dishonorable discharges, we found that was less than 1% of the veteran population. Those people go to, you know, they get court-martialed, they go to trial, there's due process, they're found guilty. They lose their veteran status, ineligible for VA care. But it's these people in the middle that get less than honorable or other than honorable discharges that they lose their veteran status and they're not eligible for VA care, but a large number of them, their misconduct was the direct result of a service-related issue, PTSD, traumatic brain injury, something that happened during their service that changed their behavior enough to the point where they got a misconduct and got kicked out of the military.
Sometimes even being a survivor of sexual assault, right?
Absolutely. Survivors of sexual trauma that reported the incident, the attempted rape or... rather than dealing with it and investigating it, they wanted to sweep it under the rug, so they discharged them with a personality disorder rather than investigating the claims. And I have some notes in front of me right now, but one thing that is kind of scary about it is that it can be done administratively. It can be done, you know, as a punishment. For example, we found a number of instances where a service member was self-medicating, maybe the effects of PTSD or depression, anxiety, TBI, after they have returned home from their deployment, and maybe they get a DUI or maybe they pop positive on a drug test. Rather than sitting down and figuring out the causes of why he was abusing a certain substance. A service member would just get separated from the military with an other than honorable or less than honorable discharge. Rather than trying to get to the cause of, that behavior.
Right. And logically, you would think that somebody who served honorably before they went to war, they had traumatic experiences like being raped or being sexually assaulted, you would think that those people are clearly showing the signs that they went through mental health. They're already being diagnosed, and then the military pushing them aside seems like such a disservice while they're on active duty and then on. Like you mentioned, there people with bad paperwork are two to three more times likely to die by suicide. And they're like some of the benefits that you're denied, you can't be buried in a funeral, like you can't have a military funeral, laid to rest in a military cemetery, and it goes on and on and on. Your VA benefits are gone, your GI Bill benefits are gone. You can't use those either. So you can't go to school and get an education. It really, really screws up a lot of the things that you have going on in your life.
And then they try to transition back to civilian life, and there's this employment gap on their resume, and they have to explain to their potential employer in a job interview, what happened? What were you doing during these 6 years? And, I was in the military. What happened? And then they have to try to explain the nuances of that, in a job interview, and that might lead to more, unemployment. It makes it very difficult for these veterans to, kind of pick up the pieces when, because when they enlisted, when they signed up, we have an all-volunteer service, and part of the reason or part of the appeal, I guess, that people sign up are these benefits, are some of the things that the VA can offer you in addition to healthcare, is some of the stuff that comes on maybe after your service with your, the education. We just passed the Forever GI Bill does some awesome stuff with vets going back to school after they're done in the service. Resources for career transitioning, housing, stuff like that the VA helps with. Those things that they thought were going to be there when they left the service are no longer there for them, kind of leaving them without the safety net.
And one of the big things that people talk about when they speak on the VA is that the VA is shitty, the VA does all these things. But the fact of the matter remains that people who are using VA service are five times less likely to commit suicide than veterans who don't use it at all, which is a pretty staggering stat.
Right, right. The VA care does work. There are some hang-ups still with wait times and trying to get it run more efficiently. There are some new accountability measures that have gotten passed here recently that hopefully will continue to streamline that process. But, the statistic that the VA came out with in the most comprehensive study that they've ever done on suicide in the veteran community found that 20 vets commit suicide every day. Out of those 20 vets, 14 of them were not enrolled in VA care. So if we can expand VA care, especially VA mental health care to vets, we can start to bring that number down. And earlier this year, Secretary Shulkin, the head of the VA, he said that the VA will now provide mental health care to vets with other than honorable discharges, but right now it's only in the case of an emergency. So that's a really good start, because that wasn't the policy before. So that's a really good start. I think we can do some more stuff that's more proactive before it gets to that point, before it gets to an emergency situation. But the VA starting to provide mental health care for other than honorable discharge service members, that's a really big step.
That was a big step, and Mike Kaufman, who spearheaded the Fairness for Veterans Act that you talked about in your article, can you kind of explain what the Fairness for Veterans Act does?
So one of the things that the Fairness for Veterans Act, the biggest thing that it does is it targets the discharge review boards. So prior to the Fairness for Veterans Act, if there was misconduct or discretion, a service member could just be discharged administratively. You filed some paperwork, you know, an officer filed some paperwork, and that person's out of the military. They're separated from the military.
And with what it only took 15, it takes 15 days. So for, like, you could have an incident to, like, if you got into a DUI, like you're drunk driving, DUI crash, if there is enough probable cause or there reasonable prudence that you did it, your commanding officer could submit paperwork and have you kicked out of the military in essentially 15 days.
Right. And so now the Fairness for Veterans Act works on the discharge review boards. So now that service member, rather than just being separated, they go in front of a discharge review board and they start to – they try to examine and evaluate the service member to see if any mental health issues or any of these conditions that developed maybe during the service member's time in the military caused that action. And then they go from there. And to piggyback on that, in August, the DOD issued new, I guess, policy changes to the discharge review boards to try and streamline them to make it easier for veterans to appeal their discharge, to go back and find out if they are eligible for an upgrade. Maybe maybe they received another than honorable discharge and they want to see if they actually really are eligible for an honorable discharge. The DOD changed some of those policies in August, which might help kind of piggyback off of the Fairness for Vets Act as well.
And they're also doing an annual mental health review for every single service member that started soon, which I hope, and we've talked about it before on the podcast, we hope that commanders take that seriously and it's not just like, all right, let's get every fucking 60 people that we have in our unit and let's just push them through as fast as they can. A lot of this, and we always hope that any of the active duty members that listen to the show take those things seriously, because if you're not documenting along the way, it could really come back to haunt you later in your life, because you're going to want access to this care. And if you just go in there and say, nope, I'm good, because you're worried about going to appointments for the next 6 or 7 weeks or whatever, it's going to really screw you up long term.
Right, and that's part of the proactive measures that the military is trying to take. And it might not be the most fun part of you know, military service is doing these mental health evaluations, but and I recognize that there's a stigma, right? Like if you are found to have some kind of anxiety or depression or you know, there's still, we're getting better as a society, but there's still a little bit of a stigma attached to that. And I know that nobody wants to have that label, associated with them, especially in the military where you're supposed to be part of this strong, you know, alpha, you know, fighting force, the most powerful military in the world. But in the long run, if you can identify it early and get help for it, you can still be an asset, not just in the military, but after in the military as well. So the VA is trying to do things, but a lot of the things that they're trying to do are still reactive. One of the things that they are trying to do in addition to the mental health evaluations is they're trying to boost their suicide hotline, and some of their telehealth issues where people can call in and get help. But, you know, those evaluations are another big step.
And this isn't something that's new. You know, like millennials get kind of shit on because they're talking about depression all the time or anxiety all the time. It's not new. Bad conduct discharges, bad paperwork discharges aren't new. You told a story in your article about a guy who was in the Korean War. This has been happening for a long time. You said that he enlisted at the Army as the age of 17, got promoted to sergeant, was wounded by an explosion, came home, started self-medicating. Then they called it shell shock. So that's why I think it's laughable when people act like PTSD is some new phenomenon. But really, it's just a mental struggle that people are going with that was a rose, and they're trying to call it by another name now to make it sound a little bit better. You always had 1,000-yard stare, shell shock, war fatigue. These terms meant the same thing, but people assume now that because it actually has a clinical name that it's some new phenomenon when it's definitely not.
Yeah, I think we're just getting better at identifying the symptoms of it. We're starting to break down the barriers and we're talking about it more. you know, like, I don't think it was until like the end of Vietnam that we really started understanding PTSD, you know, and what it was. So, I mean, like you said, this is something that's been around for a really long time. And you know, now we're just getting better at identifying it. And so now the name of the game is how do we help people deal with it?
No doubt. Well, Sean, good luck, man. Anybody looking forward to facing in the playoffs? Anybody that you want to go against?
Oh man, I don't know. You know what? After playing in the AL West for so many years, I'm kind of sick of seeing the Astros. So I wouldn't mind you know, not seeing them. But outside of that, I'm still new in the National League. I don't know. There's still a lot I don't know. So we'll be ready for whoever it is.
And we talked about before you got on the show that you're kind of nervous about maybe stepping into the batter's box for the first time. When's the last time that you actually swung the bat in a game?
Oh, my gosh. I got a pinch hit. It's my only at bat in the big leagues in 2014. And at the time, I was with Oakland. We were at home. So, you know, we had American League relievers normally don't get a pinch hit appearance. But what happened was we were playing the Red Sox. We were down big in the eighth and ninth inning. We staged this big comeback. I had pitched the three previous days, so I was down. They were giving me the day off, and in the 10th inning or in the 9th inning, they called down to the bullpen, and I thought I was going to get ready to go in the game. So I, you know, take off my sweatshirt. I start moving my arm around, and they were like, "No, you're up third next inning." And they were like, "Go inside and make sure you're loose. Like, take some swings, maybe. Like, do something." Like, and so I'm like, I'm freaking out. You know, my heart.
And what was the gap of the time that you took on that bat until then?
Oh my gosh, it was probably. Well, I was 14. I stopped hitting in 2010. So 4 years.
You've essentially taken one at bat in 7 years.
Yeah, and it was against. At that point, I get in the box. I'm facing Koji Uehara, who was closing for the Red Sox at the time, and you know, we ended up at that point we were down one in the bottom of the 10th, and you know, we'd staged this awesome comeback. I think we were down like 8-0, and we came all the way back, and I grounded out to end the game. And he has this devastating split finger fastball, and he threw me three or four of them. And the way I tell the story, I hit a rocket right at second base, and I don't know how Dustin Pedroia stayed in front of it. You know, he's got a family and stuff to think about. It was a risky career move on his part. But I think in reality, I think it bounced like 24 times by the time it reached him.
So if you get an at bat during the playoffs, it's either going to be in the World Series, like, and you came in a little bit earlier than you would have liked to, probably eighth or ninth inning, to try to go it down. If you step into the batter's box during the World Series, you're just going to throw your hat around and take it John Crux style at the All-Star game, or are you going to go after it?
I might go after it. I mean,
they give you the bunt signal, right?
Yeah, hopefully. Hopefully they don't let me think about it too much, and they take it right out of my hands. But you know, I was drafted as a hitter, and up until 2010, 2011, I played first base and right field. So I joke with people that it's like falling off a bike. You know, it's like not like riding a bike. It's not that easy. It's like falling off a bike. The swing doesn't look the way that it used to. But weird things happen in the playoffs.
Yeah, man. Well, good luck until you get to the World Series. Hopefully you guys get to the World Series and you play the Astros. So we'll have a little bit of banter there. Sean, thanks a lot for coming on the show, man. We really appreciate it.
Thanks, man. Thanks for having me.
We're going to do a little crossover episode with my boy Clem, who is my co-host on the Podfather show. There's a story that came out this week. We'll go ahead and tell you about that now. All right, well, now we have our first ever crossover edition of my two podcasts that I'm on, both for Zero Blog 30 and on Podfathers. So from Zero Plug 30, we have Captain Cons.
What is up?
And from Podfathers, we have the Clem and M.
What's up, baby? Cons is the other man in your life, huh, Chapsy?
He is. So we all know each other. We work together, and we all get along great. But there was one story that popped up, and I saw it this morning. And I said, I don't know what podcast that I should fucking put this on because it hits right into the heart of kind of both of them. And we wanted to get Cons' thought on the Podfather side just from being a non-dad and then from being a non-military person from Clem's side, what he thinks for Zero Block 30. So let me set the stage a little bit, if I may. I like setting the stage now. That's what I do. So in Jacksonville, Florida, where I actually spent a lot of time this weekend, last weekend, whatever, some weekend, lots of weekends actually, there was a story that went kind of viral over some neonatal nurses who worked at the Naval Hospital, and they were taking pictures of the babies and, like, flicking the babies off, calling the babies little assholes, little mini Satans, holding the babies not exactly the way that you would want your brand new, just fresh out of the vagina or fresh out of the tummy baby. You want to be a little more gentle there. But they weren't doing that, and they were posting it on Snapchat, posting it on Instagram, in places that primarily, like, once you post it, you see it, it's kind of gone situation. It wasn't like they were posting on Twitter or Facebook to get millions and millions of shares. It was more of a personal account. So, Cons, I want to have you first. Not being a dad, right, what do you think your reaction would be?
All right, well, I'll take this from two perspectives. First, being a former platoon leader, I would be mortified that my soldiers would be this stupid. And it's a case of people thinking that even though the app says, oh, this is going to disappear in 10 seconds, you need to know that anything you put out there could potentially be out there forever. So this is a case.
Oh, man, your Wi-Fi is fucking shitty right now, Cons. Get your ass back to New York. Cons is in Boston right now. So let's get, while Cons gets his shit fixed and together, let's get Clem. What's your thoughts on the matter?
All right. So I have a couple interesting perspectives here. I have, obviously, I'm a parent now. I also have, like, before I was a parent, how I would have felt. And it's a real interesting thing here. So obviously you see that shit. You see the, you know, first of all, like Cons said, you can't put shit on, anyone who puts shit on social media, it's going to get out there. Even if it's on a Snapchat between, like, one, your best friend, there's a chance they're going to share it, screenshot it, whatever. Don't fucking do it. Dumb shit. Now, obviously, if that was my kid, I'd be fucking flipping the fuck out, ready to, like, murder somebody, because you just don't, you know, you call my kid Satan. That being said, chaps, you've had two kids born into this world. I've had one. I've never been so fried in my life. Now, granted, you guys are in the military. You've probably went through some crazier shit than that. That was the craziest stuff I've ever been through. I've never been so tired my entire life. And all I was doing was just coaching my wife, coaching her through it, you know, just hoping nothing happens to the baby, the wife, everything. That being said, these people do that shit every single day of their lives. They probably hate the fuck out of those kids, and you have to let off steam somehow. So I almost see, like, you know what, whatever it takes, if you're going to call my kid Mini Satan, then my kid's Mini Satan. I love my child when she was born. I hated all those little other crying babies when I was in the hospital. I'm like, shut up. I'm trying to get some sleep. I don't want to hear anything. So I kind of see where they're coming from. It's hard to take the side of people calling kids Mini Satan. That's like, that's kind of saying you'd want to eat dogs, like Chaps did a couple weeks ago on the Podfathers. So I kind of see both sides of the equation here. I don't want to be the middleman, but I have to say, like, it's probably not a very fun life. Every day you're fucking in the pressure cooker of delivering babies.
See, now I think I would go on the other end. I would have qualifiers. One, if my wife saw those pictures while she's still in the hospital and can't even pee normally, we're going to have some serious fucking words. Two, if it's just me that's seeing it, I probably laugh because I would do the same fucking thing. Like, I would tell those little kids that they're being little fuckers because you don't love that baby. Like, the expectation that every nurse is going to love every baby is ridiculous. Like, you're going to be 50,000 babies deep by the time. That little baby is not even a baby. It's just like a little thing that you got to take care of for like 3 days before you put it in the car seat the correct way and send it on its fucking path. I don't give a shit about flicking the little babies off because some of those little babies are fuckers. Like, they just are. They might be Satans. They might be whatever. They're little fucking assholes. Where they made the mistake is, like what Khan says, putting it on social media and thinking that it's going to go away. And the hospital handled it wrong. Like, I think the hospital should have just came out and basically said that, like, look, it's a high stress situation. Sometimes humor, no matter where you're at, especially if you're military innate, can come out a little bit off color. We apologize for that. We'll talk to our staff and that'll be it. Kind of like what fucking Ted Cruz did last week when he said my guy posted he likes a little MILF porn. We're not going to throw him under the bus. Same thing here. They shouldn't have thrown him under the bus. It's a learning moment for the entire hospital, really for the entire social media. They should just make little statements about it. Look, be careful. If you're going to call somebody kid an asshole, do it via text message with your other employees instead of on social media for the world to see.
Yeah, I would have liked to have seen the hospital take a little better care of their own guys and stick up for them. Definitely still punish them, but stick up for them a little bit more. And also, too, going back to what you guys were saying about everybody else's kids suck. Everybody else's kids, and in my case, everybody else's soldiers, that's possible that they do, in fact, suck. But you want to be the one that comes down on them. If someone else says shit about your kid or shit about your soldiers, you're like, who are you to say that about my kid or my soldiers? I'm the one who does that. You're an asshole for saying that about my people.
Definitely.
You shut up.
If there's another staff sergeant or something that was talking to one of my Marines, I'd be like, what the fuck are you doing, dude? Like, you don't discipline my guys. I don't give a fuck what they're doing. Come get me.
Yeah.
We get that as, like, you know, being Barstool personality too. It's like the stoolies will shit on us and they'll tweet at us. They'll put Reddit threads about how much we all suck. And then the minute someone from the outside comes in, the hammer goes down and the weaponizing goes on in social media. And it's kind of like that with this stuff. And I will say, as a civilian, you know, seeing this and the fact that it was military, I'm like, that's just what military, like, you guys can, like, are allowed to be a little more, like, I don't know if the word is, like, just, you know, you guys can have a little more, like, twisted sense of humor than we do. Like, you guys are in the grind. Do whatever you want. Same with, like,
you're not always going to be Mother Teresa.
Exactly. Like, if you guys, like, they call it the suck. Like, that's just what life is. Life is the suck. And that's how I see it.
I will say this. And obviously, I'm not a father. But I will say this. I didn't have so much an issue with the name calling and the middle finger as I did with them holding the babies wrong. Because that's just, like, you're putting the baby's actual health in danger. That's terrible.
But I do think that how they see it from the outside perspective is much different than the neonatal. That's how they handle babies all the time. Like, we as people who aren't constantly around newborns view them a little bit more fragile than they are. Like, when you see it when it first comes out the cooch, it's like, whoop that little thing up like you're looking at a fucking salmon in goddamn Seattle, like at one of the markets where they throw those little fuckers across the room. Like, they're filled with pink slime and shit, but that's just like a normal way to hold babies. What I kind of think more – I want to go back to the idea of leadership. I've been getting back into West Wing again. And if you're a parent and you don't know a lot about politics or you don't know a lot about politics in general, I really suggest you watching West Wing. There's a point where Leo McGarry, who is the president's chief of staff, the entire nation finds out that he's the recovering alcoholic and recovering pill doer and all this shit. He's got all these issues going on. They find out who the leaker is. Leo brings her into the office, has her explain why she did what she did. And she said, look, I know what responsibilities comes on your shoulders. You're going with the president, whatever the president says or whatever you say to the president really might go in a lot of situations because you're his chief advisor. And I wondered if you were drinking that day. He understood the line of thinking, didn't actually fire her, sent her back on her way to her job. And I'm like, why can't we do that type of thing more? I feel like this is what it is. It's because it drives clicks at places like Barstool. It drives clicks at where I found the website at Task and Purpose. It just drives fucking clicks. So you're going to have that social media outrage, in parenting especially.
It kind of comes back to what we talk about a lot on our podcast when we're doing stuff as parents and the person's looking at you like, ugh, you don't know what you're doing. It's like, no, I know exactly what the fuck I can do with this kid and what I can't. And then I'm sure with you guys, you know, there's always probably people nitpicking stuff where a Marine or a soldier had done something one way. And it's like, you guys in the field are like, no, that's fine. Like, there's no protocol to an outsider.
You piss on a pile of dead bodies one time and you're a dead body pisser.
No, but you're absolutely right. What we have to deal with in our today's day and age with that social media outrage. And if they didn't come out and publicly say that they are disciplining these sailors, then they would catch all the backlash that they just don't want to deal with. It's a hard thing to do, to stand up and speak to the masses and say, don't you worry about that. We will handle this, when there's so much media attention given to the issue.
Because everybody wants to make every single thing to be this huge fucking deal, when in reality it's not.
Right.
Like when I let my daughter, and in fact I encourage her to cuss on like Instagram because I think it's fucking hilarious. It breaks up the monotony of being a parent. Like if she says what in the fucking heck in a video, it makes me laugh. So I don't give a fuck what all the other Southern people out there think. Like if they have their little virgin, like their virgin ears are cursed by the first time hearing a little child cuss. Who cares, dude? Just move the fuck on. Like, it's not that big of a deal. Tell them, don't flick the babies off. Don't call them Satan. Don't call them little bin Lons. And we're good to fucking go.
Hell yeah.
Well, because that's what I think, like, with you guys, with parenting, no one else has to raise your children except you. So why does anybody else's opinion matter? Why would my opinion matter about how you two raise your children? Because I'm not going to have an impact on their life.
No, and I mean, definitely not. And Clem, I know that you're getting into that portion of parenting where it's a bigger deal. But we even talked about it when it's something as simple as putting socks on your kid before you go to the grocery store, right?
Yeah, like I had a woman who literally like three aisles in a row, she kept seeing, and she said, finally, she's like, I just have to say something. You should be putting socks on her. I'm like, bitch, that girl takes these socks off every 3 seconds.
I looked at her straight in her optical units, and I says, bitch. Did you actually say that to her, though, Clem?
I didn't. I thought it really loudly, though, so she could hear my brain. I also, like...
She could read your eyes, though. You had the SMS text message across your eyes.
Yeah, for sure. And, like, this isn't something we promote. We do not promote, like, hitting elderly women on either podcast here, but I wanted to rock bottom that bitch through a table so badly at that point.
She goes by the ice cream. She's in the ice cream aisle, and Clem's comes cruising up, pushes his own little shopping cart aside, and that's the bottom line. Oh, my God, he killed her.
My God, he killed her. She snapped her head.
I don't know why my voice went from Jim Ross to fucking... Harry Carey, Will Ferrell.
Will Ferrell, Harry Carey. The moon is made of cheese.
Oh, it's delicious.
Oh, man. Well, that was a good little crossover episode. So if you want to listen to more about Podfathers, tune in with me and Clem. If you're already listening to Podfathers, that doesn't make a whole lot of sense. Or if you want to listen to more from Captain Cons, tune in to Zero Block 30. Zero Block 30 comes out on Fridays. Podfathers comes out on Monday. Give both a 5-star review, subscribe, even if you don't. I don't even care. Just press play on Friday or Monday and then delete.
Can I come be like the fun uncle on one episode of Podfathers? Because I feel like I've
played
that role very well.
Like I'm going to allow officers around my children. Come on. Keep the podcast separate.
And if you like me and Khan's dynamic, we even do our own podcast, No Quitters. It's for MTV The Challenge. If you listen to all three of these podcasts, I fucking love you. I'll kiss you on the mouth. Man, woman, child, whatever you want. I will give you one kiss. I usually say hugs. That's a kiss in the mouth kind of there. Even though I'm going to say kiss in the mouth.
15 West 27th Street. That's where it is.
Yep.
Venn diagram. Clem, how about that for a Venn diagram of a cross-section of people?
Yes. The military buff that has kids and loves the fuck out of MTV The Challenge. There's probably more than you would think. I mean, they're probably in their 30s or late 20s at the very least. So there's probably more than you think. Chapsy fits into that. He was a challenge guy back in the day, right?
I was, yep. I was a big challenge guy.
There we go.
All right, fellas, appreciate it. We talked about DraftKings already, but if you want to just bet the over or under that, you can't do that on DraftKings. You have to do that with a website that's like MyBookie. Ever since I started this podcast, people have been asking for advice, whether it's how to train your dogs or however, but I want to make you fucking rich too. Go to mybookie.ag. They do $100 cash bonuses, so off the bat, you're making money for doing nothing because you're going to have more money in there than when you started out just by depositing money because they're going to match you 100%. I would only recommend a service to my listener that's been good to me. That's why I'm urging you to make MyBookie your spot to make all your bets this football season. Join MyBookie, and we will match the deposit 100%. Can't stress that enough. 100%. Use the promo code ZERO to activate the offer. MyBookie.ag today. You get paid. You win. You're going to get paid. You can bet on whatever the fuck you want. Chicago against Detroit. Pats against the Steelers. Jags against Baltimore. Don't bet the under on that one. Little free advice. Jags against Baltimore in London. Neither team had a bye week before. Neither team has a bye week after. Smash, smash, smash the under, and then send me 10% of your winnings. Any save runs, alibis, cons?
Yeah, just thanks to the guys for joining us this week, especially Clem. He's a great follow on Twitter, and his blogs are great, and Podfathers is amazing. So I suggest anybody who's listening to CBT, start listening to Podfathers. And also, I confirmed that 3,000 troops, Secretary Mattis confirmed that the number of troops going to Afghanistan is, in fact, 3,000, as we had thought originally. Do you have any additional thoughts now that we know that for a fact it is 3,000?
3,000 troops, to put that in monetary value, is $14.8 million a day.
Wow, I didn't know that part. That's a lot of money.
That was quick math off the top of my head, right?
Yeah, that's impressive.
Nah, I saw that on Twitter earlier. I don't even know if it's accurate. But it seems like a lot of money, man. Fuck, dude. Yeah. Like, going to Afghanistan again. Goddamn, dude. Tired of fucking Afghanistan. Tired of...
Yeah, it's interesting, you know... When you're staying in a hotel, your television channel choices are limited. And I found myself watching a documentary on Vietnam the other night, and it was very eye-opening, and I learned some new things, actually. But there are so many similarities. It's just like, oh, my gosh, Afghanistan just seems never-ending at this point. And I don't know that we have the exact right answer of how to get out of there or – if we need to stay or what the solution is. And it's getting to the point where it's very frustrating, I think, probably for the Secretary of Defense, for the military, and for all their families back at home. So I just really hope we figure out something to where we can get Afghanistan in the rearview mirror, because it is taking its toll on our military and their families. And I don't wish that on them anymore.
Yeah, we definitely have got to figure it out. And we want to talk. I mean, we talk amongst me and Connor, and we talk on the podcast about things that we think, but ultimately we're not in a position to make anything different. We just confirmed that in the middle of October we're going to talk to somebody who does. We're going to go talk to Congressman Seth Moulton down in D.C. He's a former Marine Corps officer, current congressman for the state of Massachusetts. We're going to try to get more people in leadership to talk about what the fuck your plan is, dude. Let's make a plan that works. Let's not just throw money at it, throw service members at it. Let's have a plan and see what we're going to do. That's what Secretary Mattis promised us before he took the position of Secretary of Defense. And we've got to hold our people to a standard, because there's going to be more people that come back, like Sean and I talked about earlier, with bad conduct discharge, because PTSD is a big, big thing. We are going to cripple the American economy with the cost that the VA is going to end up costing us for 20 years of war, it looks like. So we've got to do something. But instead, I don't want to end on that note. I want to end on this week. Everybody's been kind of shitting on it, and I think that the scenario that he did it in was not the best in front of the green tiles at the UN –